254. Even now, France is still the place with the most spiritual and most refined European culture and the leading school of taste. But we have to know how to find this France of taste. Whoever belongs to it keeps himself well concealed. The number of those in whom it is embodied and lives may be small, and in addition they may perhaps be people who are not standing on the strongest legs, partly fatalistic, dark and sick, and partly mollycoddled and artificial, such people as have the ambition to conceal themselves. All of them have something in common. Confronted with the raging stupidity and the noisy chattering of the democratic bourgeois, they keep their ears plugged. In fact, rolling around these days in the foreground is a stupid and coarsened France. Recently, at the funeral of Victor Hugo, it celebrated a true orgy of tastelessness, and at the same time of self-admiration. Something else is also common to them. A goodwill to stand against spiritual Germanization, and an even better inability to do so. Perhaps these days Schopenhauer is already more at home and has become more indigenous in this France of the spirit, which is also a France of pessimism, than he ever was in Germany. Not to mention Heinrich Heine, who has long since been transformed into the flesh and blood of the more refined and discriminating Parisian lyric poets, or Hegel, who today exercises an almost tyrannical influence in the form of Taine, the preeminent living historian. And so far as Richard Wagner is concerned, the more French music learns to shape itself according to the real needs of the âme moderne, modern soul, the more it will become Wagnerian. That's something we can predict. It's already doing enough of that now. Nonetheless, in spite of all the voluntary or involuntary Germanizing and vulgarizing of taste, there are three things which nowadays the French can still point to with pride as their inheritance and property, and as the unforgotten mark of an old cultural superiority over Europe. The first is the capacity for artistic passions, for devotion to form, for which the expression l'art pour l'art, art for art's sake, has been invented, along with a thousand others. Something like that has been present in France for three centuries, and, thanks to the reverence for the small number, has made possible again and again a kind of chamber music in literature which is not to be found in the rest of Europe. The second thing on which the French can base a superiority over Europe is their ancient, multifaceted, moralistic culture, because of which we find, on average, even in the small romancier, novelists of the newspapers and random boulevardier of Paris, a psychological sensitivity and curiosity, of which people in Germany, for example, have no idea, to say nothing of the thing itself. For that, the Germans are lacking a couple of centuries of moralistic behaviour, which, as mentioned, France did not spare itself. Anyone who calls the Germans naive because of this is praising them for a defect. In contrast to the German inexperience and innocence in voluptate psychologica, psychological delight, which is not too distantly related to the boredom of associating with Germans, and as the most successful expression of a genuine French curiosity and talent for invention in this empire of tender thrills, Henry Bayle may well qualify. That remarkably prescient and pioneering man who ran at a Napoleonic tempo through his Europe, through several centuries of the European soul, as a tracker and discoverer of this soul. It took two generations to catch up with him somehow, to grasp some of the riddles which tormented and delighted him, this strange Epicurean man and question mark, who was France's last great psychologist. There is still a third claim to superiority. In the nature of the French is a semi-successful synthesis of North and South, which enables them to understand many things, and tells them to do other things which an Englishman will never understand. In them, the temperament which periodically turns towards and away from the South, and in which, from time to time, the Provençal and Ligurian blood bubbles over, protects them from the dreadful northern grey-on-grey and the sunless conceptual ghostliness and anemia, our German sickness of taste, against the excesses of which, at the moment, we have prescribed for ourselves, with great decisiveness, blood and iron, or, I should say, grand politics, in accordance with a dangerous art of healing which teaches me to wait and wait, but up to this point has not taught me to hope. Even today there is still in France an advanced understanding of and an accommodation with those rarer and rarely satisfied men who are too all-embracing to find their contentment in some patriotism or other, and know how to love the South in the North and the North in the South, the born Midlanders, the good Europeans. For them, Bizet created his music. The last genius who saw a new beauty and enticement, and who discovered a piece of the South in music. 255. I think all sorts of precautions are necessary against German music. Suppose that someone loves the South the way I love it, as a great school for convalescing in the spiritual and sensual sense, as an unrestrained abundance of sun and transfiguration by the sun, which spreads itself over an existence which rules itself and believes in itself. Now, such a man will learn to be quite careful as far as German music is concerned, because in ruining his taste again, it ruins his health again as well. Such a man of the South, not by descent but by faith, must, if he dreams of the future of music, also dream of a redemption of music from the North, and have in his ears the prelude to a more profound, more powerful, perhaps more evil and more mysterious music, a supra-German music, which does not fade away, turn yellow, and grow pale at the sight of the blue voluptuous sea and the brightness of the Mediterranean sky, the way all German music does, a supra-European music, which justifies itself even when confronted with the brown desert sunsets, whose soul is related to the palm trees, and knows how to be at home and to wander among huge, beautiful, solitary, predatory beasts. I could imagine to myself a music whose rarest magic consisted in the fact that it no longer knew anything about good and evil, only that perhaps here and there some mariner's nostalgia or other, some golden shadow and tender weaknesses would race across it, an art which from a great distance could see speeding towards it the colours of a sinking moral world, one which has become almost unintelligible, and which would be sufficiently hospitable and deep to take in such late fugitives.